Let's get started. Very pleased to have General Electric up next, ahead of lunch. And R&D is the lifeblood of any industrial company, particularly one that makes products as innovative as GE. So very pleased to have Mark Little, who's basically in charge of GE's R&D efforts. Thanks.
Nigel, thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining in here. So we've been spending a lot of money on technology. We've accelerated our technology spending quite a bit in the last few years. We're up now to 5% or 6% of industrial revenues as a spend on technology, and that is certainly world-class kind of a number. Why are we doing that? We believe we can drive out great new products that will take market share at nice profit margins. We do believe that with the network we have of great global businesses, we can execute better than our competitors. We're using our global network to do innovations in developing markets that we can then take out to the rest of the world. We think all this will drive share and price up for us and margins too. We have a great global research framework that I'll show you in just a minute, and we believe that we can lead in core technologies, and we track some 150 technologies that feed into our products and services businesses. And increasingly, we are networked around the world, and we want to be the partner of choice in the industries that we're in. This is GE Global Research. We are the first industrial research laboratory in the United States. If you go back to the founding of our company, back to Thomas Edison's days, there were two original sites. One was Lynn, Massachusetts. The other was in Schenectady, New York, and upstate New York. And our founders believed then, as we do now, that great technology and innovation are the source of long-term advantage. So they created the first industrial research laboratory in the United States. They got a young professor to come out of MIT to run the place. He wasn't sure it was a good idea, so he came part-time at first, but he fell in love with it, and he stayed, and he ran the place for 32 years. We are one of the last remaining widely diversified centers of our kind in the United States. We're proud of that heritage, and we're building on that to go around the globe. As I said, we started in upstate New York, a little town called Niskayuna. We've been building out around the globe. We started in India some 11 years ago in Bangalore. We now have a 4,400-person technology site. About 10% of that is GE Global Research. Our model is we run the site for the rest of the company, but each of the businesses has a great presence there as well, take advantage of the skill set, the cost position, and the reach into local markets for global innovation. We went to Shanghai, China next. We have a 1,500-person technology group there, same model as India. We then went about 6 years ago to Munich, Germany, to have a center hold in the European Union, a great technology. We've got a brilliant set of technologists there, about 200 people strong. We'll be expanding that as we go forward. We recently built out an advanced manufacturing technology center in the Detroit, Michigan area alongside a great IT center for the company. And we'll be going to Brazil soon to open up a research center in Rio de Janeiro near many of our great customers, including Petrobras in Brazil. And we are soon to announce a software technology center of excellence in California, exact location to be determined, but we'll be announcing that probably in the third quarter. This is a network we're very proud of. We have technology scouts in places like Russia, Israel, Japan, and you can count on us continuing to build out this great global footprint. Our mission is to drive breakthrough advantage for our businesses. Everything we do is about driving technology to give our businesses advantage. We track patents. We track publications. We watch all these sort of scientific things, but the only measure of our success is success in our businesses. Here's a great example of core technology for what we call NPI, or new product introduction. This is the GE NX. It's the best engine of its kind in the world. It's got the best fuel efficiency and the lowest emissions. Good example of technology that we drove in there is these carbon fiber blades. You see these wavy shapes in the front of the engine. If you looked out a  777, you saw a GE90, you would see an engine that looks like that. Those wavy shapes are composite fan blades. They're made out of polymer composite with carbon fibers in there. We're the only engine supplier who can do this. It's a great technology base. It gives us lightweight advantages, and fuel efficiency comes with that. The wrapper that goes around the engine that actually contains the blades should there be a catastrophic failure is now made of polymer composites. It's substantial weight savings as well, and we continue to spread that technology throughout the engine. Again, we're the only supplier that can do that, and we're taking that same kind of technology and spreading it into other places in the company, including in our wind business. We invent new technologies. Our chairman wanted to have a hybrid locomotive as a big emblematic green technology piece. And we went looking around the world for battery technologies to support that. We found that there was nobody who had the kind of technology we needed that could store a lot of energy. Because when you think about it, if you put the brakes on a locomotive, you got to store a lot more energy than when you put the brakes on a Prius. So we needed a certain kind of battery technology to do that. We couldn't find it anywhere. So we invented our own for the hybrid locomotive, and we liked it so much that we decided to build a business out of it. The early best applications are around energy storage for telecommunications backup and UPS systems. And so we're off now building a business where we have a factory in Schenectady in our old line power generation shop that we're revitalizing. We've got an investment that's between $150 million and $200 million going in there. I was down visiting the factory a couple of weeks ago, and we're on track putting in some great equipment. We're out checking out with global customers where these applications might be, and we're committed to build a new billion-dollar business from zero in this space. We harness advanced technologies at the GE Research Center. We have programs that are ahead of the risk appetite of the business, but again, our mission is to drive technologies into the business. I'll show you later on something that's come out of our molecular imaging and diagnostic technologies. These little beads down here are water droplets that are actually dancing on the surface of a metallic structure. And if you went on YouTube, you would see these beads fall and actually bounce back up and down, unlike the splat that you expect to see from a water droplet hitting a metallic surface. It's a very cool thing to watch, but we don't do it to make cool videos. We do it because we want to make aircraft engine blades that don't ice up, wind turbine blades that don't ice up, and even heat transfer things for like power generation condensers and boilers, where with this kind of technology, we can maybe accelerate the heat transfer by a factor of 10, which will be a huge advantage for us. So we do technologies like this, and again, our only mission is to feed them into the GE businesses. We have a strong role to spread technology across the GE businesses. Think about GE with 40,000-plus technologists. So on the order of 10% of those technologists are at the GE Research Center. We're designed to have core expertise and to feed technology from one business to another. So if one day we invent a new alloy for an aircraft engine, the next day it goes into a power generation turbine, the next day to an oil and gas driver, and maybe someday over into a locomotive. If we develop new membranes for our water business, we can use those same membranes in healthcare. If we develop new non-destructive testing techniques, say for CAT scanning, where you could do bodies, you might do the same kind of technology for engine blocks in the industrial space. So technology flows very naturally through our system from one business to another. And certainly, we have a mission to grow world-class talent. We're organized by depth of science. We have people coming together for communities of technology around computer science or materials technology, mechanical engineering or electrical engineering. And those technology groups build depth. But for real innovation, we know that the magic comes from combining the strengths of these different groups. We can bring that strength to the company. And more often than not, the flow is from the research center to the GE businesses. And I think I can say with confidence that every GE technology group has a senior GE person who has built his career first in the GE Research Center. And that's true in aviation. Chip Blankenship, who runs commercial aviation, came from the research center. It's true in electrification, in oil and gas, and so on across the company. As I mentioned, we have a strong role to drive a network of technology groups together to the benefit of the company. We have many connections with government, certainly principally the U.S. government, Department of Defense, and Department of Energy. We have hundreds of connections with great universities from around the world, not to mention the least of which is the Technical University of Munich, one of the great institutions in Germany, at which our Munich Center is based on the campus of that. We have very good connections with the professors. We use their facilities. We take their students in. Very strong, vital connection for us. And we increasingly have a long list of companies with whom we collaborate. You see a number of them listed here. We have others in the electrical space, companies like American Electric Power or E.ON in the utility space, many other companies in the healthcare space. So big and small is where we're going. In the lower right-hand corner, we talk about venture capital activities. You may not recognize it, but GE is very strong in the energy venture capital space, where we have investments through GE Capital and strong technology connections to the GE Research Center, and we have an emerging activity in the healthcare space as well. Now, I could talk all day about what we do across the GE businesses, but I've chosen to focus on two spaces to give you some sense of what we're doing and some of the excitement around what we're building in for our businesses. I want to talk first about energy and then about healthcare. You know the trends. World demand for electricity is growing. World population continues to expand. People around the world are all concerned about environmental issues in varying ways and different degrees. And security of supply is certainly on everybody's mind. All of this means we need to continue to address all of these needs with great technology. We have challenges on many fronts. People are trying to reduce their carbon footprint. There is no question that the technology is there to do it. The issue is around the cost of that technology. People are loading more renewables onto grids around the world. That creates certain fluctuations. We now have the technology to do that. We've demonstrated in places like Hawaii that we can add up to 30% renewables on a system and still operate effectively. And of course, policy is a concern. There are different policy regimes for energy everywhere in the world. We watch them all. And the lack of standards is clearly an issue for us, but we know how to deal with that. Our approach is to have a range of solutions and to have a full suite of systems answers for our customers, ranging from nuclear energy all the way to renewables that might go on a home base. And in each of these systems, we're driving efficiency, reliability up, emissions down in the cases where you have fossil fuels, and all the while driving cost of electricity down. So I'd like to give you just a quick run through some of the new technologies we have coming out. You may have heard we just announced our Flex Efficiency 50 new gas turbine in Europe recently. This is a 50 hertz machine, and certainly sometime down the road you'll see a counterpart coming out in 60 hertz. This machine gives us the best of both worlds. It's a large baseload combined cycle machine that can be a 500 megawatt plus block of power, so it's a big heavy-duty machine for people who need large chunks of power. But it has the ability to cycle very rapidly. We've designed it so it can ramp up faster than any other machine in the marketplace and can start very, very quickly as well. This is a very good machine to give you whatever you need for big, highly efficient machinery. At 61%, this ought to be the leading machine in the world with respect to efficiency, but it can also cycle very rapidly to match it made up with renewables needs. It's a very attractive blend of trying to meet both needs for our customers. We have a continued suite of turbine technology programs that comes in no small way from our aircraft engine group, but feeds in a very powerful way into the power generation world as well. We have great new computational techniques in 3D aerodynamics. We used to be only able to calculate the effect of one stage of a turbo machinery set versus another stage. Now we can do them all together. We need big, muscular computers to do this. We have our own Cray computer to do this. We have great new technology here. We match up the analysis with testing to make sure it comes out right. And without taking you through all the rest of the cool stuff we have in combustion technology and sealing, let me just focus for a minute on ceramic matrix composites. This is a new technology system, which is a material set that will allow us to raise the temperature of the gases in the either aircraft engine or power generation gas turbine and maintain low airflow to cool that. What all that means is you can get much more efficiency out of a set like this. And these components are very lightweight. Because they're lightweight, you don't need the superstructures to hold them down, driving the cost down of the overall system. It's a very advanced technology. There's no doubt in my mind that we have a world-leading position. You will see this in our aircraft engine and down the road in our power generation gas turbine technology. And this will give us a very big step forward to getting to 65% efficiency someday. And while we're driving efficiency up and power up as well, we want to be sure that we can burn any fuel anywhere in the world, in any one of our engines. We can burn things like synthetic gas made from coal or from biomass. We can take things like coal bed methane, which you might know is a very strong greenhouse gas, that if we burn it in one of our engines, reduces the impact of that greenhouse gas by a factor of 20 to 1. And there are very heavy fuels that come from places like Saudi Arabia. These are liquid fuels that are so viscous, if you had a jar of it and you turned it upside down, it would stay in the jar. We have technologies to be able to burn all of those things in any of our engines, and we have an advantage over our competitors in this space. And that gives us business opportunities in the Middle East that other people can't touch, and emerging opportunities in the biomass space as well. In fact, we bought Yenbacher out around 2004. It was a business back then that was maybe a few $100 million in size. It's well over $1 billion now. And 30% of its business comes from burning unusual fuels. We have an aeroderivative line of gas turbines as well that comes from our aircraft engine space. And this is basically the idea of taking an aircraft engine off wing and making it suitable for land-based power generation. At 44% simple cycle efficiency, this is a world beater in efficiency. And because it's a small machine, it can start up very rapidly. This is a great system for very high efficiency, very fast starts to back up renewables. And we're taking wind to the next level. I mentioned those funky composite blades that we have in aircraft engines. We're taking that same technology into wind turbines and making the structural components that will enable us to make very, very large wind turbine blades at very low cost. And that gives us an advantage. In a wind turbine, you want to be able to capture as much wind as you can in a given structure. So having long blades is a very powerful thing. This technology will enable us to do that in a very, very cost-effective way. We have great new ideas about shrinking the size of the drivetrain using some advanced electromagnetic stuff and some gear stuff as well. And we've got really very strong power electronics technologies that enable us to take the variable electricity that comes from a rotating speed that's dictated by the wind and making it a hard rock 60 hertz or 50 hertz power generation. We could do that in a way that's unlike anybody else in the world. All of this together has put us in a position where our wind turbines are the most cost-effective wind turbines in the world today. We have a great leadership position onshore, and we're building out that platform to offshore applications as well. Solar is a very interesting story for me. If you go back just a few short years ago, we didn't have a solar business of anything at all. We had at one point a silicon-based photovoltaics business. We didn't like it, so we set it aside. And we set our team to look for the next great thing in solar power. We combined the business-savvy technologist in the energy business with the people who had done some very advanced work in areas like this in the healthcare space at GE Research. And we put them to look for the best next technology. We found one in a set called thin-film photovoltaics, in a particular material set around CAD telluride. This is the same technology that a company called First Solar, which I'm sure many of you know, uses. And we thought we could one-up First Solar with some great new technology. We bought a small piece of a company called PrimeStar in Colorado. We married up our team at the GE Global Research Center. We challenged them to drive the efficiency up and the cost down. We set some milestones for them. They exceeded every expectation that we had, and with the confidence built from their work, we're now off. We've committed to the world we're going to build a 400 megawatt capacity in the United States. It's aimed first at large-scale solutions. Utilities will need solar power to balance their renewable portfolio standards needs, and you know many places in the U.S. don't have wind capacity, so they'll be looking for solar. It will make this cost-effective enough so that industrial applications will be interesting to us as well. Here's the track that we've taken. This is the track in efficiency and therefore cost that another incumbent, CadTel CEO, had. We started this in 2009, and we set the challenge for our team to get up this curve very fast. You can see what we did in generating efficiency milestones along the way. And it was the end of last year that we announced that we had achieved a record cell efficiency as measured by NREL, a national laboratory who does independent analysis of these things. As we drive efficiency up, we drive costs down, and we think we're on track to make this a very exciting business for GE in the near term. We have a lot of great technology in oil and gas. I didn't want to spend a lot of time with you today on that, but subsea technology is very interesting. Our global customers like Petrobras are increasingly finding oil in places that are difficult to get to. They need a new suite of technologies to get at that. A number of the acquisitions that we've made in this space position us with a platform to build great technology on. And we're very rapidly going to infuse our technology to make better flexible risers to get the oil and gas out from these places, subsea pumps that can separate things on the ocean floor. We will make electrical submersible pumps to complement what the wood group already has in this technology to enable us to extract more oil and gas from the systems that exist today. You probably know that about half of the oil and gas that's in these things remains in there. With new technology, we think that we can extract much more and really raise the amount that's recoverable from these fields in a very substantial way. I want to shift to a completely different space in healthcare and show you some of the stuff we have going there. We have a platform that is increasingly broad and dynamic. It ranges from old-line technologies for GE, from X-rays, from which GE was in the early days, through CAT scanning, MR imaging, through imaging agents that we got through the Emerson acquisition, through radiopharmacy, over through life sciences, and all the way over to healthcare IT. We have great stuff going on in each of these segments, but I'd just like to give you a little insight into some of them. We're on track with the next generation of magnetic resonance imaging. I don't want to go too far into what this technology is, but we're actually driving this new technology out of China because we see the first applications for this revolutionary technology being for low-cost systems. We see the ability to drive imaging costs down, imaging quality up, and drive a global product out of a base in China. You'll see this come to market in the next few years. In the CAT scanning world, we have a product out called the CT750HD. This HD is for high definition, so think of this like a high-definition TV. We've got this in the market now for a couple of years. We've already won $500 million of business at very attractive margins. And the beauty of this thing is, through its workflow capabilities, it's reducing procedure costs. It's allowing us to get great images at half the X-ray dose of what previous systems could do. You may recognize that there's sensitivity in the medical world around X-ray and CT dose. This technology has already cut it in half. And we are bringing to market some ways of post-processing the data that can cut the dose in half. I don't know whether you can see this, but to my semi-trained eye, I can see the difference between the image on the left here, which is what we had in the market not very long ago for radiologists to look at, to what we now have on the right-hand side with this post-processing that can, again, cut dosage levels by a half and give images that are sparklingly clear for radiologists to diagnose disease from. Here's a completely different thing. We've been working hard on nanotechnologies, and to us, nanotechnologies is not about semiconductor devices, but it's making material systems at very, very small scale. Of course, you'd recognize a nanoscale thing as something that's on the scale of a billionth of a meter in dimension. We're making these very small particles. In this case, they're really iron oxide particles that have some certain properties. And I think you can see quite easily the difference between the images you get with and without the contrast agent. The nature of cancer is that if you can see it in its early stages, you have a much better chance of treating this deadly disease. So you can see here a tumor that's lit up with these new contrast agents, and it's a very sharp, crystal-clear way of seeing these tumors. So we hope with this very cool technology to enable us to catch cancer at a very, very early stage and blunt this awful disease. So this will be coming to market, we believe, in the next few years, and this space should be growing very, very nicely for us. Here's again something completely different and really new for General Electric. This is cell therapy. I think you would recognize we don't intend to be a therapeutic company, but we do intend to have technologies can enable great new therapies. So the idea of stem cell technology is the idea of taking these things, growing them into things that might act as organs or in some way can help gain therapy. Our job will be to extract stem cells, to isolate them and purify them, and to even provide the devices that would grow them so that our customers could do the research to explore opportunities for these things and then someday even aid therapy. So the hope is that you would be able to maybe someday extract fat from a patient's tissue in real time while they're having an operation, pull out the stem cells, purify them, and then maybe inject them back into something like a heart issue that's going on. And there's emerging evidence in the clinical setting that by doing that, you can very rapidly aid not the rebuilding of the heart tissue, but the vasculature that feeds the heart and really aid in getting much better performance out of an ailing heart. This is a very exciting space that's only emerging. Today, this market space is in the order of a few $100 million. We think this will be a few $1 billion within the next 5 years. We have some really great new technology coming out here. Digital pathology is something that has gone very rapidly from research at our center to a real business in the making. Pathology is a study of human tissue samples. It could be like if you have a skin cancer, possibly. A doctor might shave a little piece of the tissue off. They'd send it to a pathology laboratory, and the doctor would put it up on a slide, just like you did in high school biology class. And the doctor would look at it through the microscope and decide whether the tissue structure looked healthy or not, and then they would describe therapy based on what they saw. So this has been going on for hundreds of years. We intend to revolutionize this space by making it possible for doctors to do this digitally. And by that I mean we will take the images from the slide through optical cameras and present the images not in the lens of a microscope, but in a computer screen. This will aid their ability to see things. It will aid their ability to collaborate. If you want to collaborate with a doctor who's in a different hospital, you actually have to send the slide physically today. Now, at the push of a button, you'll be able to send it to your colleague for help with the diagnosis. This will enable telemedicine to be a very real sort of a thing. Now, this activity is not reimbursement-based. This is productivity-based. And we have very good evidence from our healthcare IT business, where they already do this in the radiological space, that this kind of thing will catch on. This is a real thing. We have a 50-50 joint venture with the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Their pathologists are helping us design this product and the software that goes along with it, so the workflow is very productive. This will be coming to market in real time. We expect to get FDA approval and other global FDA-type approvals in the near term. And we expect this will be a billion-dollar business before very long. A very nice companion to it, again coming out of the GE Research Center, is something called molecular pathology. Now, this is a little different kind of a thing. As I described a minute ago, the pathologist will look through a microscope and diagnose disease based on the structures of the cells they see. This is a little bit complicated, but we've found a very clever way by staining the cells over and over again. You can see now proteins that are existing in the cells. And the groups of proteins, we believe, through statistical analyses and other sorts of very clever things, will enable us to see patterns of cells emerging that oncologists dreamed were there, believed they were there, but never knew they were there. And now, with our technology, they can see them. Eli Lilly, who's our partner, developed the trail. And we're off building a great business out of this. We acquired Clarient as a laboratory basis for building out this very space. We already have a set of technologies that will enable them to look at these biomarkers and develop laboratory services in the very near term that we think can grow Clarient quite nicely. So, again, a very short time from a wild research idea to a real business. So there you have a very quick spin through some of the GE technologies we have going on. As I started out saying, we are spending more money in technology than ever before. We believe strongly in our capability to innovate. I've tried to give you some quick feel and some insight into what's going on in energy and healthcare, but I could have talked all day about what we have going on in aviation, more deeply in oil and gas, and transportation, and on across home and business solutions. All of this is about growing our great company with great products and great services. So there you have it, and with that, I think I have a few minutes to be able to answer any questions about this you might have. Yes, sir.
Excuse me, two questions for you on the solar side. The first is, could you talk a little bit about how your CadTel product is differentiated from First Solar's? What gets you that 100-plus basis points of incremental efficiency, and can you sustain that versus First Solar? And then the second question is, given the trend has been away from utility scale, like in the last couple of years, and it's accelerated recently, particularly in Europe, away from utility scale onto the rooftop, where historically thin film has been a lot less competitive, does that concern you about market size going forward?
Okay, so first question. Thin films are called thin films because they are sophisticated material systems, but they're in very, very, very thin layers. So the trick in this thing is all about how you build up those layers. It's all about the manufacturing technologies to layer the things down efficiently, to make the right kind of structures. As I mentioned, we have some very good technology in this area that comes from our creation of the digital mammography space in healthcare. And the very people who did that came over to work on this solar space. We have the tools and the techniques to do this at the lab, and as the results show, we are on a very fast track to keep to get where we got and to keep right on going. So we have a number of tricks still to play to make this much better over time. There are other things like the kinds of glass you use in these systems. As you go to more costly glasses, you can get better penetration of the photons coming from the sun through the glass. Those sorts of things build up efficiency as well. It's all about the sophisticated ways you lay this down to get the efficiency in the system. So it's really kind of high-end technology, and we think we still have lots of tricks to play. I mentioned to you that we're building a 400-megawatt facility. In the scheme of power usage in the world, this is a small thing. Think about 400 megawatts of output. The sun actually shines about 25% of the time, so you're actually getting about 100 megawatts of real power generation capacity. That's about the size of a single modest-sized gas turbine. So in terms of adding capacity to the world, it's a non-player. But that factory at that size should enable a $600 million to maybe $1 billion business in size, so quite consequential. So we don't need a huge market to be very happy with what we've got. And we think that in the near term, we're going to have plenty of opportunities in this large-scale utility, maybe industrial space.
Where do you guys think you can get that efficiency? You talked about it's going to pat, you're at 12 whatever something percent.
Oh, we dream of 14, 15, 16%.
Great, thank you.
Back to the ceramics, you talked about the some of the applications within within power and engine turbines. But what about within aviation? I understand that ceramics is a very important part of the LeapX development. Can you maybe talk about where you are in terms of being comfortable with that technology within the LeapX?
Okay, so you are quite right that there will be components in LeapX in the near term that come with this technology, in the longer term, more components. The first component will be what we call a shroud. This is a stationary component that's used to block the gas flow between some of the rotating and the stationary components. So in terms of sophistication, it's at the lower end of sophistication you need. We make these components now. We have them in the field, testing in various places. To give you a non-aviation example, we have actually made a bucket for an industrial gas turbine that's around this size. I won't tell you the model it's for, but we've got it built. We're going to bring it to the field and test it this year for industrial-based gas turbine. To make a component this big is a lot more challenging than making a component like a shroud for an aircraft engine that is this big. So we know we can do this. We have the technology well in hand. The issue for us is to drive the cost down. At the cost level to produce these today, we would not be happy putting them across our components, but we have very significant programs to drive that cost down, very clear targets in mind, a clear timeline to do that, and we intend to do that. We drive it first in the aircraft engine, shrouds, then some of the stationary components, then some of the rotating components, and then someday over to land-based power generation. So if this is a good example of synergy between our aircraft engine business and our power generation business. We work as one team, research center, those two businesses, very well-defined programs, very routinely reviewed. We had MLT up at the research center. We're showing where we are. This is very clearly and sharply in focus.
And then turning to the flex efficiency gas turbine, I understand that's a peaking design for peaking demands, not baseload demands.
I think there's some confusion on this. I'd like to try to clarify this. This is a very large gas turbine, which will have world-leading efficiency. So you could put this in any baseload application in any world in competition with anybody else's gas turbine. It has the added value of being able to cycle up and down very rapidly. So it's the best of both worlds. I don't think you would want to see too many peaking plants that are 500 megawatts in size for combined cycle. You might have an LMS 100 aeroderivative for exactly that kind of a thing, but not a big 500 megawatt block. But the beauty of this is that it has that big capacity, world-beating efficiency, and can cycle like heck, too. Best of all worlds.
Great. Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome.
All right, time. Thanks, Mark.
Okay. Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Yeah.